People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Fine Music Radio and Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Well, as you know now, the big Christmas show here at the Artscape Opera House is the Rocky Horror Show. And since it first opened in London in June, way back in 1973, at the Royal Court Theatre upstairs, Richard O'Brien's The Rocky Horror Show has become the world's favourite rock and roll musical, having been performed worldwide for 45 years in more than 30 countries and translated into over 20 languages. This particular production is being directed by Chris Luscombe, who for the last something like 13 years has been producing his version of the show. I say his version, but it certainly has Richard O'Brien's stamp of approval. And in the iconic role of Frankenfurter is Craig Urbani, whom we remember so well from his stunning debut, really, as Buddy Holly, and then went on, his career was propelled from there. But before that, he actually did play in the Rocky Horror Show as Rocky, the young muscle man. So, Craig, welcome. It's great to have you here, and what a role you've now got.
Absolutely. Thank you. Nice to be here again. Yes, I've gone from the created to the creator.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. my first professional role was Rocky, which was in 1992. It was a Colin Law production, and we rehearsed in Johannesburg and actually opened at the theatre here in
the self-same theatre.
The very same theatre. So it's gone full circle, and it's a dream role, something that I've been doing in my head for many, many years. And I'm still pinching myself every now and then in the rehearsal room that I'm actually doing it. We're actually rehearsing it.
But Craig, I want to just say as well, you've also done Brad, haven't you? So this is your third role in the Rocky Horror Show.
Third visit to the show. Brad was a brief run at the Elizabeth Snedden in Durban, which was fantastic. I loved Brad. Originally when I auditioned, I was hoping to get Brad. But then they didn't think I had the voice in those days or the acting chops. I was new, and so they made me bleach my hair and go to the gym.
and wear gold
underpants. But it was great. And then I did get a shot at Brad, and that was sort of 93, 94, I think, just before Buddy. Just before Buddy sort of started in South Africa for me. And then and now I'm revisiting the show and the main role.
In a dream role, as I say. I want to ask you all about your dream role. But first of all, just touching on Buddy for a moment since we mentioned it. That was an amazing, as I said, propelled you, didn't it? It was, and you did the run overseas and all sorts of things, didn't you?
It was extraordinary. I mean, I was reaching the end of the Rocky Horror Show. I still had the bleached white hair when I went in to audition. We still had PACT then. We still had the Performing Arts Council. And it was, I think, one of the last big productions they did. And I went in and I sort of had a sort of little limited knowledge of the guitar. And I played a few chords. And on the way to the audition, I phoned my dad, who's a musician. And I said to him, what did Buddy do? And he sort of told me that'll be the day. Oh, boy, he was giving me the chords over the over on my phone. Early cell phones, they'd only just come out. And and then I went in, and I know that the directors and the producers were concerned because I was so young and sort of new. So I shared the role. We always had two buddies here in South Africa. And then eventually, unbeknownst to me, they were sort of grooming me and checking me out to go to London. And Paul Elliott, the producer, came and saw me at the State Theatre in Pretoria and offered me the part in London.
Was it a part that you loved? I hope you're going to say yes.
Oh, I mean, it was tremendous. And what was so wonderful is I had no idea what I had, what I was doing or what I had, or that this was going to be something so special, because it did turn out to be an incredible experience. Not even a show. It was such an experience, a life-altering experience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I remember going out on the 28th of November, it's my mother's birthday, the first time we previewed. And I had no idea. I was still joining the dots and going from one moment to the next moment. And the next thing, I felt this wave of energy and love and power from the audience. And I thought, goodness, what's happening here? Something tremendous was happening. And it kind of happened like that for most of our runs, certainly in South Africa. Every night was like an event.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done the part here in England, Australia, New Zealand, Denmark, Spain.
Good grief.
Singapore.
Did you tire of it at all, or do you remember it very, very fondly? And if you were asked to do it again, would you?
Both. I tired of it only because it was taxing. Mm-hmm. But I was younger, and I wouldn't do it again because I'm too old now. But I still get asked to perform the songs whenever I'm doing gigs or functions and stuff, which I'm more than happy to do. I'm so happy to play them, and because it was a huge legacy in my existence, and they're great songs. Mm. As recently as a few weeks ago, I did a concert and hauled out the guitar and did somebody's songs because people always want me to, yeah. And I'm quite happy to. It was a tremendous part of my life, and I got to see so much of the world. I earned some very nice money playing it. I got to work with some extraordinary people. I got to meet extraordinary people, and it was. But you know, it's one of those things where you want to make sure that you're doing it justice. And I remember when I was in Australia, I'd just come off a long run of it, and the producers wanted someone who knew the role. They had a fully Australian cast, and they said, "Well, let's get someone who knows it." So they phoned the UK, and the guy said, "Well, we've got Craig Abadi." So I went out and I said, "I'll just do Sydney." And as we got towards the end of Sydney, the producer said, "I need you to do Melbourne. And I said to him, no. And he upped the money. And I said, no, I'm not negotiating with you. I actually can't do it anymore. I'm starting to feel like I'm pulling against it and not in the right direction." And he upped the money. And then I said, no, really? And he upped the money. So eventually I said, "How much? Okay, I'll do Melbourne, but no more." Anyway, I did Melbourne, Brisbane, Canberra, Singapore. And eventually I was out there for a year. And after that, I remember thinking, wow, I'm buddied out. You know, you have to learn to take a rest, not quit. There's a difference.
True. That's true. But what sort of age, Craig? We're not trying to find out your age, but when you started, Buddy, what sort of age were you?
When I first started, I was 2 years older than he was when he died. Buddy died at 22. Uh-huh. And I was I turned 24 right at the beginning of Buddy. I actually remember on my birthday playing to 17 people in the audience at the Joburg Theatre because it hadn't taken off.
Yeah.
And again, there was also another phenomenon. There, you know, we started out like some shows do with battling to sell tickets, and then towards the end, we had ticket touts, which I don't think we've had very, very often in South Africa. You get that on the West End and Broadway. And we were packed, and people were coming back for the fifth, sixth, even more time to watch the show. And then I think the last time I did it, I was around 32 years old. I think that was when I did it in Australia. So I was sort of pushing it then because there's an opening line, just 19 years of age and so much talent. So you have to be able to pull that off. So that's why I said I don't think at 48 But it was
a
tremendous role, tremendous show.
Now I want to talk about Frank. But first of all, what's your first piece of music, Craig?
My first piece is a classic. I think originally Nina Simone did Feeling Good, which I love her version. But this version by Michael Bublé is very, very close to my heart. I love the song. I love the sentiment of the song. I love the arrangement of this song. And I just love what Bublé did with it. And I've sung it so many times, so it's become one of my. It's in my arsenal for all my corporate gigs and things like that. It's Feeling Good, Michael Bublé's version.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, You know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life.
Lovely voice of Michael Bublé there. The song was called Feeling Good, the first choice of my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week, Craig Oboni, who's in town to play Frankenfurter in the Peter Turin production of the Rocky Horror Show on here at the Artscape Opera House. I see, before we start talking about Frank, Craig, that you also, I mean, you've done other iconic roles. You've done Billy Flynn in Chicago relatively recently. Danny Zuko in Greece. You've even done Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music.
Yeah, I loved that.
Did you?
I loved it.
Now, I would have thought even now you'd be too young for that.
Thank you. But it was, I think they have begun casting him a little younger, because I also had a sort of older image in my head. But I really enjoyed that show. I think for me personally, I felt like I was in a real old style musical, yes. Which I was. You know, it's a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical.
And a great one at that.
It's such a great piece. And I did it with lovely Linnell Kennard, who's a homegrown Cape Town. And this was I hadn't seen her in West Side Story. So
yes.
They had done the first production here. And actually, we were doing the show together at the Natal Playhouse. And I was loving her. She was the most consistent, beautiful Maria. And I really enjoyed the kids and the whole story and being in this classic. And then she came to me one day and said to me, oh, they're doing West Side Story again, and we're looking for a Lieutenant Schrank. Do you want to be in it? And I remember just hearing such glowing reviews and everything. I said, I'd be honored to be a part of that production, which I then did. I did in Johannesburg and the second one in Cape Town. Mm-hmm. I played Lieutenant Schrank in that. So, yes, Von Trapp was wonderful. I loved playing that. And recently just came off Chicago, which was another dream role of mine that I had done 11 years ago. But I was not in the best frame of mind then. I think I was suffering with anxiety and drinking too much. And, I was kind of on a bit of a downward spiral. So it was, and I actually was doing Rock of Ages with Claire Taylor, who I think most recently was here with Matilda.
That's right.
And she said to me, Craig, what roles do you still want to play? And it was the end of 2017. And I said to her, I really want to revisit Billy, and I would love to play Frank. And the universe gifted me both these opportunities. So I've just come back from we did Chicago here, opened here at Artscape, then Johannesburg, and then we went to Germany and Austria.
Gosh.
And I came back in September.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is very recent.
Which is recent, yeah.
And you mentioned a spiral. I'm right at thinking, saying that you're a whole new person now, aren't you? You had a big kind of setback, and then you've basically pulled yourself together rather spectacularly.
I would like to take more credit for it and say I saw the light and I made all the decisions, but a lot of it was sort of thrust upon me, and I was given little choice, and I was becoming unwell. My health was suffering. And I sort of realized, and I still to this day I have realizations and sort of flashbacks of moments and times in my life where I think, wow, had it not been for intervention from friends, my mother, various counselors and rehabilitation centers, that I probably wouldn't be around. So yeah. it was, you know, at the risk of sounding dramatic, it was quite bad. And mm-hmm. I was really not, I was heading one way. And so it's been a period, a sort of process of pulling myself further and further out of the darkness, if you want, over the last 5 years. And I'm in a wonderful place now. I'm the healthiest I've been. I'm in the best shape I've been. I'm a lot more open to suggestions and ideas. I go to meetings. I've assisted people in getting into getting help. You know, I've seen a lot of the horrors of substance abuse. You know, I was never one to dabble in drugs, but I drank. I drank mm-hmm. a lot of alcohol mm-hmm. and it's like being freed from a prison, really, and so I'm very grateful. And you know, it says in the program that you get gifts of recovery, and I honestly believe that this conversation I had with Claire was a prime example of that.
Yeah.
That she said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "Well, I would love to revisit that, Billy, and I would love to have this is my dream role." And I'm sitting here talking to you with one in the bag and rehearsing the other one. So
the other one, yes.
I'm extremely grateful.
Because we're recording this interview during rehearsals in one of the rehearsal rooms here. And I gather, because I also spoke to the director, Chris Luscombe, that your day is actually quite long and you've got to be physically fit to do this, don't you? I think he said you start at 10 and you go right through till 6.
Yes, and I was, because Frank enters sort of 20 minutes into the show, I had the first few days off and I was thinking, gosh, I want to get going. And now I would love to have an afternoon off because I'm in the hills and I'm strutting around and doing it. And it's tiring, it's taxing, but it's challenging, but it's a lot of fun.
Do you have to wear the heels at the rehearsals?
Well, it's sort of advised to at least for a portion of it because we want to get comfortable. We want to get used to it. You don't want to surprise the body in tech week and suddenly realize you've got problems. And they've had shoes especially made, which I've got rehearsal heels, which I'm wearing, but then I fitted my shoes yesterday, and they feel very comfortable. So I'm hoping that's a sign of things to come.
But they're quite high heels, if I remember from the film.
They're high, and I'm a tall man, so when I put them on, it's a bit like when you put on roller skates. You feel like you're so much taller. Meantime, you've only gone up 5 or 6 inches. But these are.
Have you worn high heels before?
Only when I played Rocky and Brad, because he does. They both do it in the floor show.
Right, that's right.
But yeah, never to this extent, and never once as clunky as this. But it's wonderful. It's part of the process. And Christopher Luscombe has got a wonderful. I really like their production. Mm-hmm. I think they're making some changes while staying true to what the people are expecting, to what the fans want, to what Richard O'Brien wanted.
Well, let's have another piece of music, Craig, before we... I want to get into the secret of Frankfurter with you.
Yes.
Let's have another piece of music.
Well, I thought I would do this one from The Greatest Showman. When Michael Bublé came on the scene, he sort of gave men like me with baritone voices, sort of lower voices, a resurgence in our corporate career, because suddenly he was doing all these popular songs and beautiful versions of these songs, and they were in a key that I could sing in. So I was so grateful that he came along, and I still am. And the same thing goes for The Greatest Showman, which is another thing I'm going to put out into the universe. I love this movie. There's so much talk of it being turned into a stage show, and I would love to get a chance to pull out my Hugh Jackman and play this role if ever it does become a stage show. But in the meantime, I just think this is one of the most beautiful songs from it, called A Million Dreams.
I close my eyes and I can see a world that's waiting up for me, that I call my own. Through the dark, through the door, through where no one's been before, but it feels like home. They can say it all sounds crazy. They can say, they can say I've lost my mind. I don't care, so call me crazy. We can live in a world that we desire. Say we've lost our minds. I don't care if they call us crazy. Run away to a world that we desire.
Every night I lie in bed, the brightest colors fill my head. A million dreams keeping me. The world could be a vision of the one I see. A million dreams is all it's gonna take. Oh, a million dreams for the world we're gonna make.
However big, however small, let me be part of it all. Share your
colors fill my head.
A million dreams are keeping me
awake. A million dreams, a million dreams.
I think of what the world could be.
A vision of the one I see. A million dreams is all it's gonna take.
That song, A Million Dreams, from The Greatest Showman. Another choice, the second choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Craig Urbani, who's in town to play Frankenfurter in the production of The Rocky Horror Show, directed by Christopher Luscombe, and is on here at the Artscape Opera House through the festive season. What a nice place to be, Craig, incidentally, through December, because I know you're based in Johannesburg, aren't you?
I could think of a few better places to be, actually, and I'm hoping to get some family down and sort of have a bit of a Christmas celebration here. But yeah, absolutely. When I saw that we would be here over this period, I thought, wonderful.
Do you have family in Johannesburg?
Yes, I mean, most of my family's there. I've got a brother and sister in the UK. My daughter's there, Jenna, who's 12 years old. And she will be coming out soon. She's very, very excited about this one. She keeps saying, "Dad, I can't wait to see you in this." And I haven't fully explained the whole story to her. Obviously, it's a little saucy for a 12-year-old, but she will come and she will see it. She watched Rock of Ages when I did it, which has also had some adult material in, but again, not too bad. And you know, the kids these days, they tend to know a lot more than certainly than I did at 12. But so she'll come out, and we're gonna have a wonderful Christmas period. Yeah, my sister's coming from the UK.
Oh, that's great.
So it's a wonderful place to be.
So now I want to find out how you got this role. First of all, why you wanted it, and secondly, how you got it, and thirdly, when I heard you were doing it, I thought, no, surely not Craig O'Barney as Frankenfurter. He's one of the straightest people on stage these days. But then Tim Curry was an example, wasn't he, of not camping it up.
Well, this is the, you know, the trick with this is, and I mean, not to take away from any other wonderful performances, he's not a drag queen. Mm. And it's not all camp. In fact, a lot of it is very butch, very masculine. And it's that trick of appealing to both men and women. You have to kind of be, if you get it right, I believe that men and women find you charming, men and women find you appealing. And they almost, men and women, find themselves quite attracted to you, quite drawn to the character. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're going out there and you're just camping it up, you're going to alienate the women. And if you're going out there and you're just trying to, you know, be all sort of overly butch with it, you're going to alienate members of the audience as well. So it's a fine balance, which Christopher Luscombe is really helping me with. I have a lot of Tim Curry in my head. You know, when I played Danny in Grease, I had John Travolta so firmly in my head. I grew up on these things, and in a way, I think it's a good thing, because if it ain't broke, and these people, you know, these performances are iconic. You know, Tim Curry's Frankenfurter. I just believe he got such a blend of naughty, nice, sexy, evil,
sophisticated.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, and it was never intended to be played sort of hoity-toity and so as British. But I'm certainly doing that in the room now, and so far, no one's sort of trying to fight that. But Richard O'Brien actually said, Christopher Luscombe was telling us, he wrote it American. It's American B-movie characters, you know, sci-fi B-movie characters. And Frankenfurter was meant to be American, but in came this man who just made Richard O'Brien laugh, and he was sort of poncing it up. And so they liked that. And then he just defined it on celluloid, if you like, on film. And so I think the trick for someone like me now is to steal the bits that you know work, to stay true to what the fans are kind of expecting, because you know the fans are fans of this show.
Absolutely.
What they want, and still inject a little bit of Craig O'Barney into it, mm-hmm. and try and make it mine, you know.
Now, I hope there's Craig O'Barney in it.
Yeah.
Talking about the accent, I was watching some interviews from the cast of the film. Little Nell, the lady who played, she said that she heard Tim Curry tell her that he was upstairs in the bus driving through London, and he suddenly heard someone speaking, then decided on this accent, you know, the sort of rather posh cut glass.
Oh, is that another story about how it...
As you say, another story, I'm sure there are many.
Yes.
Starting to say things like pride instead of proud.
Yes, wasn't it wonderful?
That sort of thing.
Yes, he must be very proud of him, Janet.
Yes,
doesn't he? Hospitality.
That's right, yeah. There you go.
You know, he sort of chewed the words, which I love. He kind of made a meal of the dialogue, mm-hmm. which I thought was... And now Little Nell, he didn't have a Columbia in the show, but originally that was meant to be the magenta role, mm-hmm. but he walked past her on King's Road on the way to the theater where they rehearsed and finally did the 3-week run. That's all it was going to be. And eventually he liked her so much that he put the tap sequence, because she was a tap dancer, mm-hmm. he put the character and the tap sequence in for her.
Yeah, into the time warp.
It's beautiful, you know. I mean, it's just these stories are wonderful. And I'm not sure if back in the day in 1992 when I did it, if they told us all these stories, but I wasn't listening, all 21 years of me. But I'm finding it very interesting now. And I mean, I would love Richard O'Brien to come out and see our production. I'm not sure if he will. You know, he's quite a hermit. He's quite
Yes, I believe so. And he lives in New Zealand now.
Yes, and he's
when I was home. Having a chat to Christopher Luscombe, he said something quite interesting. He said that Richard O'Brien had said he was worried about the way the show had become. It had become a bit too sleazy and people swearing and yelling at the audience, and he wanted to pull it back a bit. And Christopher Luscombe said that's been the best part of working on this particular production for the last 13 years.
Another thing with Frank, you know, as we're saying, some of the pitfalls could be to play him just camp drag queen. I believe another one is that this character is given license to break the fourth wall. And we know now that it's become a sort of cult musical where people come with their script as well. The mm-hmm. audience members have their interjections. They're going to come dressed up. They're going to shout. That can detract from the story and detract from it still existing as a piece of theater. These are characters, and you're telling a story. And if that thread and the And the linking is lost because the Frankfurter is indulging too much and adding 15 minutes onto the show. Or the narrator also has that. She talks directly to the audience, or he talks directly to the audience. Something is lost. And what Richard O'Brien said in one of the interviews I saw was, he said, if you want to have fun and do this show properly, take it seriously. Mm-hmm. So there's fun to be had. I mean, it's Rocky Horror. But yes, he doesn't want the power to shift from the stage to the auditorium.
Yes.
It must remain on the stage. You acknowledge that they're there. You acknowledge that they play a part in this. You acknowledge that they are a part of this experience, but it's your show on stage, and you need to keep it there. And I've seen productions where it's missed the mark as a result of that. So although it's encouraged and he loves the success of it, that's not his favorite aspect of what Rocky Horror
Has talking about. I saw an interview with Richard O'Brien where he said the film is okay to go along and do all those things because it's exact timing
every night.
But if you're doing that in the audience, as you say, it can slow down the action.
It takes your control away because it'll never be the same two nights in a row because you're never going to have the same audience. So in terms of that, you tend to lose the control from the stage, and an audience doesn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
They've come to see performers.
You must be in control.
You
must be in control.
Within the fun.
Okay, Craig, what's your next piece of music?
Next, what did I choose? I chose Josh Groban's version. I mean, I love Bright Blue's version of this song. Proud South African band. I just thought more appropriate a bit of Josh Groban because of the station I'm on.
Oh, yes.
And he did this with Ladysmith Black Mambazo, and such a beautiful song, and certainly one of our anthems of South Africa way back when, and a song that has stood the test of time, and obviously because Josh Groban decided to record this a few years back. I love this version of Bright Blues Weeping by Josh Groban.
Josh Groban there. The song is called Weeping, and it was the choice, the third choice of my guest, Craig Obani, on People of Note with me this week here on Fine Music Radio. Craig is in the midst of rehearsals as we record this interview for the Rocky Horror Show. Then it opens at Artscape for Christmas and New Year. A lovely experience, I think, to go to the theatre and see this. And what I was going to ask you again about the role of Frankenfurter, he has all the iconic songs as well, the Sweet Transvestite, for example, which, by the way, must be a great moment for you. Didn't you always wish you could sing the Sweet Transvestite?
Yeah, well, you said earlier why this role. From the moment I was sitting in that rehearsal room at 21 years old, and I watched Jeremy Crutchley, who I adore, and he's such a great actor. So I watched an actor approach this. As I say, it comes in 20 minutes in. They're waiting for it. It's such a famous entrance.
Yeah.
The big cloak, you know, that's just the head with that sort of Dracula collar behind. And he's sort of ominous. And then the reveal where he shows Brad and Janet what he's wearing, which is, you know, fishnets, a corset. And it's just so much fun and so much to play with. And when the opening of the song is just that sort of vamp, that
Yes.
And everyone's getting ready. I think the only downside is that I'm not part of the Time Warp, which is also an iconic song from the show. But Sweet Transvestite, I don't think you can ask for a better entrance.
It is. It's a fantastic entrance.
And it's written so beautifully because he literally does the number and leaves.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
And so the audience is sort of left with, what was that? You know? And hopefully it's going to be done right and it'll hit them hard and give them all the feelings we want them to get. And then he's off. The next time you see him is... he's in the lab.
That's right, with a slab. Can you remember seeing the film, the first time you saw the film?
Absolutely.
Which presumably was long before you played Rocky.
Yes, I saw the film when I was way too young to know what was happening, and I remember just loving the music.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I watched it on a projector, actually. I think it was, my dad used to, you know, set it up and we'd take the picture off the wall and we'd do it. It's how I used to watch... MASH and things like that, and Fawlty Towers.
That's right.
Back in the day, these were all the, you know, you used to get a short before the movie.
That's right.
So we used to watch MASH and I remember seeing things like Spartacus on that and
on the wall without a picture
on the wall without the picture. And I remember because we had the little picture, you know, the hook
in the middle
was
of the
in
picture.
The middle of all my movies that I saw as a child. But I remember it well, and then I obviously watched it subsequently many times over the years, and every time I'm just kind of amazed and surprised by the absurdity of it, and if you think about the time when it came out,
yes, that's the other thing,
and you know, it was banned here to begin
with. That's right,
and of course you're pushing boundaries. I mean, Richard O'Brien, I think he was finding it difficult to find his identity, and he managed to sort of put it all down and create this extraordinary piece, which has become such a cult.
Well, someone was saying to me the other day from the cast, from the production, that these days, you know, the gender thing is suddenly quite up to the fore, the transgender, all those things now are much more open and free. So the show probably doesn't have the same shock value or gasp value as it does. So now you can really enjoy it for what it is. It's music. It's message, really, because it has a message as well.
Yes.
But how does this... We keep hearing that this is the new production, but at the same time you said you want to keep it for the fans to know what they're coming to.
Yes.
And it's on a huge stage here at Artscape West, very often like at the Victory in Johannesburg. It was small.
Intimate, a lot more intimate,
This is this Artscape where we see the Phantom of the Opera and Cats and goodness knows what. How would you say it's changed without giving too much away?
I'll tell you how it's new. It's new in that it's gone back to the old. They've done. I think over the years, it's deviated so far from what was originally it was originally intended to be, and what Christopher Luscombe has done, working with Richard O'Brien and the casts that have been doing it for the last sort of 6-7 years, is they've gone back to getting the messages and the themes and the flavor and the feel across of what it was originally, and taking that control and power back. I think for many years it was just seen as a huge party when you go to the theater. It still has to be a show. It still has to be a story. You still have to buy into the characters, have empathy, and identify with aspects of the characters, or it just becomes a glorified rock concert. Mm. You know, so it's new. It's new in that it's gone back to the intended feel.
Yeah.
And so I think fans of the movie and fans of the show and fans of the soundtrack are certainly going to love this production. It also motors along with some pace. There's not a lot of overindulgence. We tell the story. We don't ram it down the throats. Look at us, we're being sexy. Look at us, we're being saucy. Look at us, we're being funny. We do it. It's got subtlety to it. It's got a charm to it. And it moves.
Yeah.
Rather leave an audience, you know, with a show like this that we know so well, we can carry on living it after. But you don't have to feed it to us, spoon feed it to us, and make us spend more time.
Apparently it's quite physical. This production is quite physical
as
well.
The choreography is wonderful. Mm-hmm. So we've got part of the creative team out from the UK who's working with our guys. Our Rocky is, I mean, I didn't do it when I played Rocky. I stood there flexing muscles, but he's flicking and flacking, and he's upside down more than he's on his feet, you know. And extraordinary that we have a talent like Jared Nurden who can do it. He's really like a gymnast. Mm-hmm. He's a beautiful looking young man, and he's got a fantastic body, and he can sing, and he can dance, and he can do all these other tricks. So it was almost like, well, show us what you can do, and we'll put it in, you know.
Oh, right.
So yeah, it's visually spectacular. The choreography is great. It's high energy. Mm-hmm. And as I say, it moves. It's got a lovely pace to it, which I think is great.
And people like the narrator. How do you feel with a narrator who's a woman? Kate Normington, whom we all know. And I mean, I can't wait to see her.
I think with a narrator, because this is the character that certainly she breaks the fourth wall. She talks directly to the audience, which gives them an opportunity to talk directly back to her. You need someone who has incredible comic ability, and we have that in Kate Normington. You need someone who knows the piece well, and we have that in Kate. Someone with experience, we have that. And she's a very funny human being. And just sitting around the table reading, I mean, every time she starts doing one of her links, she's quite extraordinary. She really is a funny.
Is she using a voice similar to that? Is she using
You know, because the narrator's got this sort of the authoritative figure.
Yeah.
In the midst of so you sort of look right, and there's the chaos happening, and there's Frankenfurter sharing beds with Brad and Janet. Cut to the narrator, who will give you an explanation of to what you just saw and why it's okay. And therein lies a lot of comedy and irony and humor. Yeah. And a few people can do it better than Kate. And it used to be, you know, originally it was played by a man, but over the years, this has changed, and this is one of the aspects that they're embracing now.
And apparently Richard O'Brien quite likes the idea of a female narrator.
And I think Richard O'Brien likes the idea of someone who works. It doesn't matter if you're male, female, black, white, young, old, if you're telling the story the way, and it's paying homage to the piece and adding to the experience, then you're right to play the narrator. Yeah.
Your next piece of music, Craig, number 4.
I wanted to get this man in who, I don't know if he belongs on your radio station, but this song is by Robbie Williams. It's called Eternity. Beautiful, one of his lesser known songs. I'm a huge fan of this man. I met his father. I sang with his dad in the UK when I was doing Grease in Stoke, and I love him. I think I identify with he's like a bit of a wounded animal. He's also had his dark periods in his life, and I've always loved his music, and I'm a sad fan of this man. And I thought if I was going to choose anything, Eternity would be a good one. So this is Robbie Williams, the bad boy of pop, and this song's called Eternity.
Your eyes so you don't feel them. They don't need to see you cry. I can't promise I will heal you. if you want to, I will try. I'll sing this summer serenade. The past is done, we've been betrayed. It's true. Someone said the truth will out. I believe without a doubt in you. You were there for summer dreaming, and you gave me what I need. And I hope you'll find your freedom for eternity. For eternity. Yesterday when you were walking, you talked about your mom and dad, what they did that made you happy, what they did that made you sad. We sat and watched the sun go down, picked a star before we lost the moon. Youth is wasted on the young. Before you know it's come and gone too soon. You were there for summer dreaming, and you gave me what I need. And I hope you'll find your freedom for eternity. For eternity. For eternity. You were there for summer dreams. You are a friend indeed, and I hope you'll find your freedom for eternity. For eternity.
Robbie Williams, and the song was called Eternity. So, Craig Urbani, my guest, we're talking about the Rocky Horror Show, but you know what I was thinking, Craig? People know you as well from television. You did, a quiz show of some kind. You were in Scandal.
I've done a few things on TV. I did Isidingo back in the day for 5 or 6 years. I'm on Scandal at the moment. It's quite nice because I've got a character that kind of comes and goes. And I'm not sure if they're working around me and sort of allowing me to go and do my theatre or if they just don't want me around that much. But it's working beautifully at the moment because whenever there's a sort of break, like I filmed now between Chicago and coming to Cape Town, I had a storyline, an arc, as they call it. So that was fantastic.
What's the character's name?
Damon Bradbury. He's Layla, who's played by Natasha Sutherland's brother. Yeah, it's wonderful. I enjoy the different energy and focus of TV. I've had the pleasure of working on two internationals last year in Cape Town at the film studios. Both times had a bit of dialogue and a bit of acting, and then got killed quite brutally, which is always fun.
Yeah,
okay. Oh yes, absolutely. And I got to work with some amazing overseas people. And Edgar Ramirez was the actor I had to fight and get killed by. So that was a real privilege.
That's a strange thing to say, isn't it?
I do enjoy the TV and film. I'm still learning a lot there. I mean, I'm still learning a lot everywhere, but I think stage is the home. Mm-hmm. I think it's where I feel most.
Since this was a role that you really dreamt of, your two dream roles, the one in Chicago and this one, is there a third dream role lurking? I know you mentioned
Greatest Showman would be Showman, nice. Yeah. Should it come? I'm not sure. It's of course so nice for me to put myself in the shoes of being able to play these roles whilst Jonathan Rocksmith is out of the country playing Phantom. But when he's back, you know, the wonderful talent that he is, I would certainly choose him for a lot of the roles. But I think I'm better suited to comedy, lighter stuff.
And musicals.
And I think musicals. I mean, I've never considered myself a tremendous singer, but my mother always said to me, you're a package deal, Craig. You know, you can do a little bit of everything, and it kind of works. I think it's sort of jack of all, master of none.
Look at you. Okay, well, we've got to end now. And I'm hoping everyone listening to this is going to go rushing along to see you, because it sounds absolutely fantastic. At the moment, I haven't seen it because you're still in rehearsal.
Yes.
But I shall be there. Seeing you in fishnet stockings and high heels is going to be...
It's worth a trip in itself.
Something to get used to, I'm sure. But you look as though you're thoroughly enjoying yourself as well, Craig.
Having a blast.
What's your last piece of music?
Time to Say Goodbye, which is appropriate. And also because I just quite simply, I'm not sure which version you're playing, but I saw Andrea Bocelli at the Dome, and he blew my mind. He's such dignity, such presence, such power, such a star. And I think he's done this with so many ladies, thank you so much for having me, and I'll say goodbye with this beautiful piece of music.
And we'll have Andre sing it for you. How about that?
Awesome. Thank you.
Craig Obani, thanks very much.
Sogno all'orizzonte e mancano le parole. Sì, lo so che non c'è luce in una stanza quando manca il sole. Se non ci sei tu con me, con me, sì. Le finestre mostrano tutto il mio cuore che è acceso. Chiudi dentro me la luce che ho incontrato per strada.
Sogno all'orizzonte, manca le parole. Io sì, lo so che sei con me, tu mia luna, tu sei qui con me. Mio sole, tu sei qui con me. Adesso si vivrà.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
It's astounding. It's bigger, steamier, and more outrageous than ever. It's the most anticipated musical show of the year. Peter Turin and Howard Panta present Richard O'Brien's legendary smash hit, The Rocky Horror Show. Get your thrill on with this spectacular cast, including Craig O'Barney as Frankenfurter. Do the time warp at Artscape Cape Town, December 6th to January 12th.
Time is fleeting.
Book now.